The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Johnson. No Joshua Arbuthnot today. That's okay, though, because we've got the returning Mo. I can't run through all your nicknames.
Yeah, don't bother.
You get the big plug.
The storyteller. That's the new nickname after what we went through off air, though. Nobody will ever hear it, but yeah. Some fun stories that someday I'll share on the podcast.
It's always good to share stories. I love stories. And, I mean, wrestling's filled with stories. Some good.
Yeah. And these were wrestling stories, so good coincidence, right?
It's the synergy that connects us all together. Double or Nothing is tomorrow. That is the main thing we're talking about. I'm supposed to be at Vegas right now. If COVID hadn't screwed me over, I would be in Vegas getting ready to see Mike Tyson walking down to the ring.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that of all the people affected by COVID, it's hit you the hardest.
Yep. Not the healthcare workers, not the elderly. It's some little person in Calgary that wants to go watch wrestling in Vegas. That's who's been affected the worst.
Yeah, clearly.
I mean, it sucks, but health and safety above all. It sounds like everyone's being tested for these shows, and it sounds like AEW's handling this appropriately or as best you can. I mean, yes,
but as John Oliver pointed out with the Jacare Souza right before the UFC event, there just is no way to be 100% safe with this stuff.
And I mean, from all indications, it sounds like the NHL and the NBA are going to be playing in bubble cities.
Yeah.
Everything's a gamble. Everything's a risk. Some numbers are really going down, but you know, I'm going to love going back to these podcasts in a couple of years, just seeing how things evolve naturally in pro wrestling and how it reflected on history.
So, because you're an egomaniac.
A little bit. A little bit. My face is plastered everywhere. Before we get to Double or Nothing, that's the main preview, you weren't here for the Owen show. And from my understanding, you're a big Owen fan. So,
of course. Well, I mean, you know, Owen was Owen, like, I remember back in the day when Owen debuted,
In Stampede,
you know, back when he debuted, and, you know, and he was so good right away and, you know, pushed right to the top and having these great matches. And here, you know, within a couple of years, I mean, he's in, like, 1988, and me and, you know, friends going down to the convenience store, and there'd be the wrestling mags, and they'd have like Ultimate Warrior on it, and you'd open it up and there'd be Owen, and having debates like, would Owen beat Ultimate Warrior? I would say he was better, and other guys would say he wasn't, and things like that, like back when you're kids, right? And but that's how highly we thought of him. Like, back in the territory days, you didn't think of, you know, like nowadays, if you look at, I don't know, MLW, as much as it might be good and has its fans, or, you know, NWA, you're looking at it and thinking, oh, it's not the level of WWE, and the wrestlers aren't the level. But back in the territory days, even though it was like really at the end when I was, you know, seeing it, and you kind of like the guys that you saw on TV in your own city were as big stars. You know, so the guys at Stampede Wrestling were as big stars as the guys in the WWE. or WWF at the time in a lot of ways to us, because they were local, they were on at the same time. It was just as good or better. And, you know, and we'd be seeing these guys. And so, yeah, we'd be thinking, oh yeah, Owen's as good as anybody. He could beat anybody. And Owen was just right from the start. Like he really was. Like you watch him, and even at Stampede Wrestling, which had a lot of innovation and such, he was probably, I'd say he was the second guy I saw that did moves that just absolutely blew my mind, and it's like never seen anything like it. The first would have been the Cobra. And you can go back and watch like the Cobra versus Davey Boy Smith and stuff like that on New Japan. He was amazing. But yeah, I mean, Owen was the second guy who like just like, wow, this is what wrestling can be.
Now, kind of when in Owen's history, when he popped into WWF, what did you think of his run in WWF? Like just kind of a general, like his build from being the Blue Blazer, and I believe he goes to Japan, and then he comes back. How much do you remember from that time?
Yeah, he has some dark matches and that type of thing. And I think even like he did like, I think the first time I saw him, actually, he was just a jobber. He wasn't the Blue Blazer. He was just like a jobber guy. You know, they didn't know what to do with him yet. And, you know, first time we saw him as the Blue Blazer, like you knew like 2 seconds in, like on the way to the ring, he was still unrecognizable or, you know, so recognizable that, you know, you just knew it was, you know, it was Owen right away. And anyway, we were happy to see Owen there, though that it also was like Stampede Wrestling was shutting down, you know, and then it was revived and then it was shut down again. And it's got this funny history like that. And I mean, just seeing Owen, it was like, yeah, okay, great. More people are going to see Owen. But on the other hand, it was like, what? That means we're not seeing him in Stampede where he was so good. Right. So it was a little bit bittersweet, but I was hopeful. Like I'm hopeful that that's going to get over, cause I know how good he is. And theoretically it fits his wrestling style fits the gimmick, but you in the back of your mind, you knew how hokey it was. Like you just couldn't, you know, you couldn't not see how hokey the whole thing was.
Yeah. Just because this is one of the bigger points for Owen's career, what did you think of his feud with Brett? Like as that's happening live and in color, what did you think of that feud and that the WrestleMania match and then ultimately the cage match?
Well, I'll go back a little bit here. Because I mentioned I had a story that about Owen, so I'll go back. So Owen was in there in the WWE, and he wrestled. I think it was WrestleMania 6. He wrestled Mr. Perfect, and shortly after thereafter he left, and he lost a mask match against I think El Canac in Mexico, and that's where he dropped the Blue Blazer gimmick. And he was back in Calgary, and we knew he was going to become a fireman. And that was about the time he stopped wrestling. Stampede Wrestling wasn't around. He'd been in WWE, hadn't worked out. We knew he was going to become that was it. Oh yeah, he's going to become a fireman like Keith Hart was, and you know. And I went to a show, Saddle Dome, and I'm watching it and look over to my left, and about, I don't know, 20 feet away from me, 3 rows up, there's Owen and Martha sitting in the stands watching it. And a few people were coming up and asking for autographs, but mainly he was being left alone. It was probably about 5,000-6,000 people in that house that night. And it was really strange. I was watching it so much, watching him. And I think it was a match. I think it was Dino Bravo versus Brutus Beefcake. And just looking over at him, and like I said, we knew he had stepped back from wrestling. He was going to do the, you know, the fireman thing. And the look on his face as he's watching this, you could just see him. He's just gritting his teeth and shaking his head. And you know, and Martha's saying things to him like she's trying to, you know, just kind of calm him down. And he would point to the ring and shake his head and say things. And you could just tell that you couldn't hear what he was saying, but it was just so obvious. He was like, I'm better than these guys. I'm so much better than them. So much. And there they are doing this, making this living, and I'm not, and making this big money. And it, you could just tell it was eating at him. And it's true. He was way better than them. Even at their best, they couldn't touch him. And that was kind of like shortly after, thereafter, we heard that he had gone to Mexico. Then he had a short stint in WCW. I would recommend not watching the videos on YouTube of him in WCW because he leads when he wrestles Rip Rogers, he leads what is nowadays very inappropriate chant about a wrestler who has had a feminine gimmick. But that was, 1991, I think. But as soon as I saw him there, and I just tell that he was still had the drive. And it also looked like Martha kind of didn't want him even then, was trying to talk him out. Like, it's not that big a deal. Like, don't worry about it. But you could see it. You see the drive and the anger. So, yeah, then he ended up back in WWF, and he struggles, right? And he teams with, Jim Neidhart, the New Foundation. And they have these horrible pants, and much like he had the horrible pants in the gimmick he had as the tag team with Coco Beware. And it was really seeming like this guy was never going to get a chance to show what he was like, because we knew he was so much better. And he was just lower mid card job guy, and WWF at the time would just look at a small guy like that. And because he was at the time small, now he's, now he would be a good sized guy. Like, now he would be, 230 pounds and 5'11", or, in that range of 215. That's a fair sized guy in today's wrestling, but not then. Right. And we just saw him. It was frustrating as a fan of his, because, he's getting this, the New Foundation is a bad gimmick, because the outfit is bad. The gimmick with Coco Beware is bad. The outfit, all of it is. And he's more than that. And then Brett's champion, and consistently people are beating the hell out of him to get to Brett. He was the job guy, or just the guy backstage that was jumped, or in an interview that was jumped, and it was always to get to Brett, and he never got retribution. And it was like, finally, when the whole idea came about of the brother versus Brett from Jealousy, and the fact they were going to do it with Bruce, where it would not have worked as well, because Bruce wasn't as good a worker. He was older, and he was, it still would have worked, but it wouldn't have worked as good. I look back, if you look at that build for that feud, it's probably, I think, the second best build I've ever seen from the WWF, or the best. It's the Hogan and Savage from 88 that went from WrestleMania 4 to WrestleMania 5, where, the first was Savage wins the belt at the end of the tournament after Elizabeth brings Hogan out, and Hogan puts Elizabeth on his shoulder. And right there is the first hint, just this, for half a second, just this look from Savage of jealousy. And then it goes away, and the seeds are and it was so good. But this was just as good, man. It was, hey, I don't care about being a champion anymore. I want everybody to know how good, or about being a solo champion anymore. I want everybody to know how good Owen is. I'm so proud to team with them. And they became a team, and they were an awesome team. And then Owen turned on him, and then Brett brought him back together and said he understood, and it was just frustration, and he didn't let him get to him. And then that was after Survivor Series, where Owen had turned on and kicked, and then Brett's selling his leg for months from the injury that Owen did to him, but he's forgiven him, and they have the title match against the Quebecers, and then Owen kicks his leg out from his leg, and Brett was, before that, Owen asked for a match. Before they had that, he's like, I the only way to settle this is for me to prove I'm as good as you, face you. And Brett's like, I will never face Owen. And then he kicks his leg off from his leg, and Brett finally, and the interview is one of the best interviews ever, and he's just sitting down. He's just looking at the ground, and then just raises his head. You want to fight? I'll give you a fight. I'll give you a damn good fight. It's just so good. Like it chills. Like, and it made Owen. And, of course, they couldn't sustain it. They couldn't keep the storylines. He was now a mid-carder to upper mid-carder for the rest of his run after the Brett thing, you know, in tag teams and tag team champions and in a much better space. But it's like, you know, it was said on the thing, and Meltzer said this many times, I know, you know, if he had been there when like all these great workers came in, the Guerreros and the Jerichos and these guys, I think that's when he might have got a world title run, just because he would have been, you know, in there with those guys, and the matches would have been incredible. And he was such a good personality too. You know, his I got two Grammys is one of the all-time great moments, funny moments. You know, running away with the two Grammys, accidentally knocking the drink on Vader. Vader getting pissed, like he gets up like he's gonna kill him, like he legitimately was, and Owen just laughing at him, and Vader just losing it, starting to laugh, and it's just, yeah, you know, always miss Owen. Like he was very special. Sorry, that was a long ramble.
No, I quite enjoyed it. So I'm all for the rambles, and that leads us into what has led to the resurgence of Owen Talk, the Dark Side of the Ring. Have you seen the episode, and what did you think?
Yeah, I saw the episode. It was well done. I mean, a lot of what I just mentioned is left out, obviously. I mean, they just kind of jump from he's there and he's not doing well, and then he's feuding with Brett, you know, things like that. Like there's like the story, you can't tell that story in the 42 minutes or whatever the television show is, and then that's a shame. But as far as the show and the people they got interviewed and the different things and telling the story accurately, I think they did a nice job. And you know, it's funny because it's sad. It's sad to watch him, you know, the passing and the memories. But there was something about the ending, just seeing that his kids are okay. They miss their dad. But, you know, one's a lawyer. One's a journalism graduate or student. And they work for the charity. And the fact that they took the negative and they honored Owen so beautifully with this foundation was uplifting, and they didn't let the spirit break them. They didn't let the bitterness get to them. They did their best to honor him and turn it into something good. And I found that very uplifting. So from that perspective. So yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I as I sit on the podcast with Josh, I thought this is something that could easily have been two episodes like the Benoit. It's nice to know the kids are well adjusted. It's nice to know that they're not in, this hasn't ruined them or left them completely in shambles. And it speaks to what Martha was able to do on her own. The one thing that, I've never seen the clip, like the thing that was holding Owen up, and just seeing how small it was and how easily that, like 6 pounds of pressure is nothing. That's absolutely nothing. To see that is just, that was a really solid gut punch. And the blood on the ring. Now I believe that came
that
from.
That was rough.
I believe that came from the Heat, Sunday Night Heat. They had the Brood and they did a bloodbath. And I believe it was on that side and that was stained from there. I don't know if that was Owen's blood. And there's no way ever. I'm not entirely sure. That's one of the things that, because when I saw that, I was like, oh my god, there was blood there. I never knew that. That's, oh god, the wrestler's having to wrestle on that. That's so terrible. But when you go through and you look at the card for the Over the Edge pay-per-view, And the Sunday Night Heat before it, they had a angle with blood, the blood being thrown on them for the, because the Brood used to do that bloodbath.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
Okay, so that's interesting. I didn't realize that. I thought that was, you know, when I saw the clip, I'm like, oh God, there's Owen's blood, blah blah blah. So I mean, it's much better to know that that was fake. Hopefully. I remember when I was working at the time. At a gas station. It was a night shift, and you know the radio was on and the news came on, you know, Owen Hart's passing. It was so surreal. That's how I found out. And at the time when I had Sundays off, I would go up to this guy who I met through the gas station. And he was just a good guy, and his kids liked wrestling, so he used to order all the pay-per-views in. And they invited me into the family, and I would go up there and watch them when they were. And he was quite a well-off fellow, and you know, and he would tape it for me when he knew I had to work and bring it in for me. And, you know, he comes in and he brings it in the next day, and my relationship changed with him. And he's like, yeah, Owen, and you know, and it's too bad as well, you know, shit happens. And I was, what? And don't get me wrong, I know people die, and things do happen. Like, but that was like, no, and I couldn't look at him or go up to his place again or anything the same way. He was a really good man, but that was my gut punch right there. And I remember taking the tape and just for days, just like not watching it, but wanting to watch it. When I finally did, you know, one time was enough. They should have stopped the show. When you're watching the wrestlers and you see The Rock get on there and does this little, you know, SmackDown hotel. And then at the end, you go, Owen, I loved you. And you see the tears in his eyes and you're like, they should have stopped the show. And I think they made a good point in the documentary. They should have stopped the show. I always thought they should have stopped the show out of respect for Owen and the fans who had seen that, who weren't quiet the rest of the show because they just seen something horrible. And the wrestlers who had just lost somebody, one of their own. But when you think about it, yes, immediately is a death. We need to see do we need a criminal investigation? Immediately, everything shuts down. Everything becomes evidence. So they really, really blew it, you know, in Kansas City that night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember being, probably six when Owen died. I just remember being in kindergarten and hearing like phone ringing and then watching the news, and it's just a blur because it's. I'm six and suddenly I'm like, what's happening? Like, holy crap, what's going on? And just everything that followed from it. Like you hear the story. The one thing I've always heard stories about, in regards to Owen's funeral is how massive it was.
Oh yeah.
And it was massive. And I've heard countless stories about just how many people were there and just how it was almost like, I believe it was D'Lo said in the doc, where he said it was like a head of state dying.
Yeah.
And at that time, wrestling was massive in this city, and the Hearts were massive in this city.
I could have gone. I didn't go. To me, it was too painful to go. And, you know, I know that there was people that were upset, but there was a lot of people also who were, you know, there and seeking autographs and such, and I'd heard about that, and it just disgusted me.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
it's definitely not the time to be searching for some sort of autograph. So the one thing I take from the doc is this is something that could have easily been prevented.
Should have been.
The police should have been involved from the drop of a hat. Just like the minute this happens, it should have been like, we need to find out what happened. Like, yeah. We can't, like Meltzer tells a story where he's talking with, where he's talking to Martha, where he does the interview with Martha, and he's talking about, just being on the phone with Terry Funk, and Terry Funk's crying, and he's talking to them.
It's a work. Like, it's a work.
Yeah. And, 'cause
everybody wanted to believe that.
Yeah. And it was,
I mean, when I heard it on the radio, I wanted to believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. That was the thing where you're like, just please let this be some stupid storyline that this company's spitting out. They have Russo, they have Vince. Like,
and they have been doing a lot of offensive bad storylines, so it seemed plausible.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
No. It is one of those things. Like, I'm glad the doc happened. I'm glad it's out there. I mean, it's just this whole season of Dark Side of the Ring. I don't know if you finished the complete season, but
was that the last episode?
Yeah,
it was, wasn't it? Yeah, I've seen them all then. Yeah,
I'm only missing two. I'm missing Cocaines and Cowboys and the Road Warriors. But I just feel like the theme for the most part of this season was how terrible of a person Vince McMahon is.
Well, I mean, both of those. I mean, I wouldn't say Vince necessarily comes off good in the Road Warriors, just because he you know, how they try to take the gimmick of, you know, Hawk's alcoholism and turn it into an angle. So, I mean, that's not good. But largely, I didn't find that one super upsetting. Cocaines and Cowboys is more just kind of fascinating. What an interesting character, you know, and really has nothing to do with WWE, you know, other than he was trying to compete with them, and good luck with that, buddy. yeah, but again, it's not news, is it, that Vince is maybe not a prince of a man?
No.
You know?
The more comes out, and the more you're kind of reminded of, you're like, oh God, this is brutal. I'm glad. Last point, and then we'll get to Double or Nothing. I'm glad that they can put to bed the Hall of Fame talk. And I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's, I think it's just, you gotta respect Martha and the kids. That's what they want, and it's really as simple as that. There's no other way to put it. It's what they want. Let it go.
Yeah, I mean, now we're getting, and this is the positive, there's a T-shirt out there for him, and maybe there'll be some other events where Martha shows up and tells his life story. I could see her at a convention and stuff like that. And if that's where his memory is shared and stories are told, and it's not at the WWE Hall of Fame, not only am I good with that, I'm ecstatic with that, because that just kind of feels right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There's no easy way to transition from that. That is a thing, but we're getting to AEW's marquee pay-per-view. It'll have no one in the crowd. This is basically their year anniversary. Double or Nothing. Just very quickly, before we get to the card, we're going to call this, they've been alive for a year with this pay-per-view of doing shows. How have they done in your eyes up to heading
excellent.
Into this?
Excellent. They're the best North American wrestling product, I think, by a country mile. And, I mean, obviously most people agree, because they, when it came to, you know, the awards and that were given out last year, even though they hadn't been around that long, they pretty much every website and everything, they've dominated all the best of, you know, best promotion awards and such. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, is there things to improve on? Sure. Are they, you know, one of the real good takeaways, though, is when people have had a criticism, they've said, oh, and they've listened and adjusted, you know, which is something we don't see necessarily from other people.
Wonder who so, you're talking about.
Yeah, so yeah, it's so funny actually. You know, thinking about all this, thinking about the WWE ratings, and then you know, kind of just well, oh, the excuse. Well, that's okay. It's because they got the you know, it's the excuse. Don't have Becky, and you don't have Roman, and blah blah blah. And I'm like, yeah, I don't buy it. You know, and it just had me thinking back to how different it used to be, like WrestleMania 10. When, I mean, they had lost Hogan, right? Already lost Hogan and such, really, essentially. And they wanted to make Lex Luger their next Hulk Hogan. And the crowd loudly, boisterously said, we don't want Lex Luger to be the guy. We want Bret Hart to be the guy. And because of that, they changed their plans for WrestleMania 10. And instead of Luger walking out as the champion, Bret Hart walked out as the champion. And then you look back to if that was now, you know, yeah, okay, I guess you can say that Roman Reigns didn't walk out with the championship. Seth Rollins did when he cashed in. But even that was all to make Reigns the star, not Rollins, that he got screwed, right? Like, they would not adjust now. Whatever. Now we know better than you. And it wasn't always like that, man. And that WrestleMania 10, Bret Hart, Lex Luger, is the fine example. They went with the guy the crowd wanted, and that was the right move.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that, like, you look at AEW, and I feel like they've had things that they can work on, and every company's going to have something that they need to grow and work on. But I feel like, for the most part, this company has worked. Obviously, TNT Turner is very happy because they signed, what was it, a 3 or 4 year deal? Like 3 months into
their... I think it was three, but a really nice deal.
And they've got another show in the woodwork. So, I mean, they're going along strong. NXT has not really put a dent into them. Obviously, they're taking away.
They put a dent into them. They'd be over a million if not for NXT, I'm sure.
That is true. That is, I will give you that. But I feel like NXT.
But they haven't stopped their momentum. I mean, it's that's the thing is. I mean, you got to keep in mind AEW is getting like even at the before the pandemic and everything. I mean, they were 900,000 viewers, let's just say, and you know, I mean, there was a point where TNA was getting 1.2 to 1.6, 1.8 even sometimes 1.4. Like, you know, significantly more. And yet they could only get like 15,000 people to pay for the pay-per-view. You know, I think the highest pay-per-view was something like 65, 70,000 for Kurt versus Samoa Joe. Meanwhile, AEW is getting 100,000 every time. It's not just how many fans there is. But it's what makes them a successful, why you can't deny it, is how well they convert those fans, you know, just wonderful. They just convert the fans into paying for the product in a way that, you know, a lot of other companies struggle to, and including WWE. WWE, like 5 years ago, that wasn't the case, but it is right now.
You look at the roster, and it really feels fleshed out for them. And you look at it, Moxley's on top, and Moxley is John Moxley. He's an obvious draw. Chris Jericho is incredible. Chris Jericho, in a lot of ways, I think Matt and Nick Jackson called him their version of Hulk Hogan, because he's working backstage with everyone, and he's trying to make everything better, and he's trying to better AEW.
Which means he's nothing like Hulk Hogan.
Thank God. and I mean, the other thing with Jericho is, when this started, I thought, well, he'll be there for these couple years that he signed these 3 years, and then he'll probably go back for one last run in WWE and then retire. I could see him staying with AEW long term, maybe going to the WWE Hall of Fame, but I don't know if he's ever going to wrestle for WWE. I know wrestling never say never, but I feel like he's really ingrained in the product with AEW behind the scenes and in the main in front of the cameras.
Yeah, he definitely is. That said, he has said that he would, I mean, he himself has said, yeah, I would like to go out with, you know, I mean, it's WWE. I'd like to go out with one, but I don't know. Maybe he'll feel like that a little bit less as time goes on. I mean, I'm okay if he never wrestles for WWE again, because I got him wrestling for, like I say, what I already think is the better company as far as, you know, an in-ring and out of the ring product. Better promos, better storylines, slower storylines. Like they've taken 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever. If you could have imagined that you could have had a build for a pay-per-view between Lance Archer and Cody Rhodes and you would really want to see it, it would have seemed impossible.
Yeah.
But not under them, not with what they do. Like I'm like, ah, man, I really want to see that. That's, you know, like they've really made me interested in it because it's the storytelling. So it's better storytelling, really good wrestling, and it's better wrestling than WWE, not because they're better wrestlers, but they aren't put under all the limitations.
Yeah.
You know? So it's better wrestling, better storytelling, and way better promos.
And I got to say, speaking on Lance, if you compare him, Brody, and Matt Hardy, I'd say Lance is the best one that they brought into the three. I feel like Lance has been a slam dunk. And
he's been great. I think, you know, we talk about how much better Moxley is than he was as Ian Brown, but it's really hitting me more and more all the time how much better Sean Spears is than he was as Ty Dillinger.
Even they just let the wrestlers do their jobs, and if it doesn't work, then you have to be adaptable and you have to change things. Looking at this card, we have 9 matches, including the pre-show. There is one change to a match, and they'll be talking about that on the pay-per-view, but that I'm going to save that for when we get to that match. Obviously, the first thing we're going to get to is the pre-show, or the buy-in, as it's normally called with AEW shows. They really like their gambling. We've got Private Party versus the Best Friends for the number one contender for the AEW World Tag Team title. Man, so you're having a pre-show match that will pay off later on.
It's your pre-show match is not just two guys thrown together or for a title that means nothing. This actually has consequences. What a concept.
I know. It's been a year for I'd say it's about a year for Private Party, and same with Best Friends. How do you think
Party is more? I mean, they really got their breakout at in the tournament for the titles in probably September, right, when they beat the Young Bucks. So that's probably their, you know, where you would list them. But yeah, it's interesting. The one problem is I don't feel that and again, it's nothing's gonna be perfect, and it's constructive criticism, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't feel that the rankings is really working.
Yeah,
and it's kind of, I think, a pretty good example of this is, you know, I mean, Private Party are ranked number 3. I'm like, how? Why? What? Like, I don't get it. You know, like, why is Private Party ranked number 3? What's the reason for that? And, you know, so it's not perfect, but you know, I mean, Best Friends, it makes sense to rank number 1. I'm trying to think to myself, and I look at the match, and maybe you have an opinion on this, what confuses me is if the champions are Paige and Omega, which one of these is the right team to take on Paige and Omega? You know, I don't know. Like,
it depends on the storyline you're going with Kenny and Paige, because it depends on what you're doing with Paige the alcoholic and where he stands with the Elite. I don't know. My pick is the Best Friends. That's who I'm kind of feeling may go take that next step, but they could feed them Private Party as a to get a win when with Hangman being back and then get the ball rolling from there to build to their next feud on whoever that's going to be.
These are all baby faces, right? So that's part of the thing about it that makes it very confusing as to who are they facing? I don't know. It would be interesting though to see Adam Page versus in the ring with Orange Cassidy to see who the crowd was cheering.
Yeah,
because they're both so insanely popular, right?
You know what? It could be Private Party because it sounds like from everything that's happened on BTE that Hangman's trying to have Private Party murdered. So
that's true.
That could be where they're going with Private Party and the $12 that is owed. This could be the payoff, where Private Party is not just coming for $12, it's now coming for the titles as well.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So it's interesting because I feel like Chuck and Trent have been having this little thing going on with Omega, and Private Party has this thing going on with Hangman. So it depends on which side you kind of want to go with.
Okay. So it almost feels like they're going to give us a winner and loser. So we're not going to, it feels like no matter what, like the Bucks or somebody else is going to have to be in whatever happens. You know what I mean? It feels like it almost feels like it's leading to some sort of three-way because it just feels like that would be better for the storyline.
I think that could potentially be where they go. And I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. And it's just like all these people involved, Best Friends, they have their thing. Private Party has their thing. And then Hangman and Kenny off to the side with the titles. I feel like all three of these have been a little more fleshed out, and it creates for that interesting conversation of like, okay, well, what's next? And there's no clear cut winner for this match.
How refreshing is that? That's commonly the case in AEW.
I feel like there's only a couple matches I can call the winner, and there's only a couple. And
ever.
It's great because you have no idea what's coming next. And shuffling, anything else you'd like to add to that match before we shuffle along?
No, feel free to shuffle.
All right, I'm going to get to one of the guys that you feel has been better than Ty Dillinger, Mr. Sean Spears taking on Dustin Rhodes. All I've got to say is, boy, I loved SSN. I thought that was a great little thing from Sean Spears, and that could be a great little thing that they can use when Tully can't be at the show to help elevate Sean into a nice spot. It's interesting because Cody beat both these guys in the tournament. Cody beat Spears, and Cody wouldn't throw in the towel for Dustin. So they're kind of all tied back together with Cody in a way. And Spears has really been pecking at Cody. So yeah,
it doesn't feel like that's over.
No, and I'm really curious to see where that's going to go. And honestly, I'm going to just make my pick now and say I think Sean Spears should win this. I think Dustin should still almost kind of have some of the effects from the brutal massacre that he took from Lance Archer. And Spears should get the win, and this should start getting Spears kind of rolling.
I think Spears definitely should get the win. I get the feeling that the storyline of him, with getting a tag team partner, that's dropped. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Tully. This promo, as good as it was, I like the one he did like 2 weeks ago, where it was him talking about Cody and how he was heartless to not help his brother out, and it was just him looking at the camera, and I thought that was a really, really solid promo. Yeah. So Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm, how good will the match be? It'll probably be pretty decent. I mean, I'm not expecting it to, like, you know, set a record or anything like that for the best match ever, but it's been a short build, but it should be a solid match, and it's being well done, and yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. That's what you want out of an undercard match. Something you're like, yeah, that'll be a good match, and it'll be a good match, and I think that I don't know who's going to win. So.
Those are the two that you absolutely hit the nail on the head. Shuffling forward again.
Yeah, that's what relaxes me before I sleep.
I'm just going to step around that and not say anything. So we have an injury, and it sucks. Britt Baker has apparently torn her ACL, and she's out 6 to 9 months.
Which, all that long?
Yeah.
Thank God she has another way to make money.
Oh, I can't see AEW leaving her high and dry. I imagine she'll take an on-air approach after she can travel a bit more.
I saw the match, but I didn't see what caused the injury.
So it was, I believe, Hiro Shikita, Shida and Statlander had Nyla Rose up in like a fireman's carry and then ran her in the corner. Really? And you could see that her knee buckled because it landed more on her knee from Nyla Rose, and then she was just out of the match from there.
All right, that just sounds like one of those spots that you didn't know it would be as stupid as it is, and now you know, and should never do it again.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes you have to learn with wrestling moves on what you think might look cool but will be dangerous. It's a shame. It's really a shame.
Oh yeah, she's been so good as a personality. The promo she did with Reba, whatever it is, in her office with the as the makeup person. All that, like, I love that. That was so good. And her stuff with, and obviously they were building something between her and Brandy, and Brandy's whole her and Tony, you know, that's awesome stuff. So yeah, it's a damn shame.
I could see her eventually getting into the booth with Shivani at different points as the knee heals.
I think she will probably be over the 6 to 9 months on Dark. Maybe doing some vignettes or backstage promos, but probably on Dark, I would say.
I'm okay with that. Like, if you pepper in a couple of videos here and there a month just to keep Britt Baker in people's mind, and when she does come back, then it's that much more of a it's bigger for the women's division when Britt comes back. But she was scheduled for a match, and she won't be there. And she was scheduled to take on Chris Statlander, who those two have been having a little bit of a feud going. But in Britt's place is Penelope Ford, second by Kip Sabian. If Kip Sabian's still alive after that ladder match, we will see. What do you think of these two going at it? There's no build or anything. Would you have scrapped Statlander's match completely, or do you go on with the Ford and give them like a 7 to 10 minute match just to kind of get them out there, maybe develop something moving forward? What would you be thinking?
I definitely think it's the right move to put them out there, and it's simple. Both of them they need the ring time. You know, both of those performers need the ring time. Yeah. So yeah, I mean they need to get better. They need to work. They're still green. So you put them in there, and that's how they improve. So yeah, I absolutely think that's the right move. Don't you?
Yeah. I think because you've got someone like Penelope Ford who has a very good look, and you have Statlander I like Statlander's gimmick. So it's just finding the footing for both of them and letting them get those reps in to get them to that next level. So I would pick Statlander here. I think Statlander getting the win is the right move, especially because I don't think Nyla's losing the title anytime soon.
No.
So you got to build up some baby faces around her to go at, and I could see them building up Statlander for something.
Well, and I mean, that is the one thing, is that a lot of their best baby faces and best people to take on Nyla are stuck in Japan.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, they have to work around that.
Yeah. And they're going to be stuck there for this foreseeable future. The women's division as a whole has probably been the slowest and having struggles building, but I think you're seeing little glimmers of what that division will eventually be. And I think it's just going to require some patience and some work and some time and bringing in the right bodies.
It's tough because there's not as many female wrestlers. And, you know, a lot of them are scooped up already by WWE. You know, ROH has some. TNA is still fairly aggressive with their women's division. So it's really just tough to, you know, tough to build for them. So that's been the struggle. Definitely, that's been the toughest. But they're finding young people. They found one. I can't remember her name now, but she was working on Dark, and she also worked on Dark. I think she had a match on Dynamite. I was really impressed with. So I mean, they'll find some people. There's people out there that have just been waiting for their chance and never gotten it. But yeah, it's the toughest, definitely.
Yeah. Next up on the docket is a match that I think you will see down the line, and I think will have a world heavyweight or TNT title definitely tied into it. It is MJF with Wardlow versus Jungle Boy. MJF is amazing. I love MJF. I'd like to punch him in the face, but oh God, is he entertaining. And I think
that's what you're supposed to want to do. The thing about this crazy for me about this is MJF should be getting the world title match.
I think they were going that way because he called out Moxley after his Cody match in his little promo where he was talking. And I really believed that they were building to Moxley versus MJF.
It would have been the right move. It's completely logical. He's got all the big wins and Brody, Mr. Brody, he hasn't beaten anybody in AEW of note yet. I mean, beating up, you know, like Christopher Daniels doesn't do it to get your world title match. So that one is a bit of a misfire just from the fact that I actually think if you built up Brody Lee longer, people would be more interested in him.
Yeah.
And also if you, If you did it right, I think it would create more interest, more pay-per-view buys to have MJF definitely against Moxley, because MJF basically hasn't lost yet, so we're waiting to see that guy who gets him.
And see, and that's the thing. I think he beats Jungle Boy here because I think that they are going to continue the build to MJF.
Don't do everything you've done with him and ruin it now.
No, no. There's only one company that would do that. I wonder who I'm talking about.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't figure it out. You're just too, subtle.
Yes, subtle is what I am. I think MJF will be world champion by the end of the year. That's my bold, crazy prediction that I'm throwing out there. But I think this will be a good match, and I think this is a feud that AEW will visit a few times in the past.
Yeah, oh yeah. These two will come back together for sure.
It kind of feels like their own little version in some ways of Rock and Hunter, and just like the Rock and Austin, just the, like, maybe not to that level.
Cena, Orton. Things like that, like something where it's like, hey, these guys kind of came up young together, and they'll be. We'll see if Jungle Boy gets there. You know, he still needs to put on some more size and get a little bit more. Gets a good crowd reaction. He looks a little indie still, so you know, he has a good look, but it's a little bit of indie yet still. So I think MJF doesn't feel indie. No. So I think he's got to shed that. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be potentially a long-term terrific feud.
Yeah, that's something that you want in your young crop. You want to build in those internal storylines that people can grab on.
Yeah, for sure.
Next up on the docket is we've got getting into the bigger matches on the card, and we're going to start with this one. It is the casino ladder match for a future AEW World Championship match. And we have a grand total of several competitors in there. I decided not to count. But we got Darby Allin, Colt Cabana, Orange Cassidy, Rey Fénix, Scorpio Sky, Kip Sabian, Frankie Kazarian, Luchasaurus, and a mystery opponent. That makes a total of 9. Who is next in line to face Jon Moxley?
What? I don't know if he can get here. I don't know what the situation is. But boy, damn well feels like Pac to me. You know? Like that feels like the mystery guy, and that's the winner then. That's, you know, we'll see. We'll see if that's possible, if that happens. But that's what it feels like to me.
That's a very so. I wasn't thinking about Pac, but now that you mention him and you think about the vignette that they did, if he can get over, if Tony can do money magic and somehow get Pac into the States, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. I mean, the Rey Fénix Orange Cassidy match from Wednesday was
incredible. That was so good. I told you a few months ago, I'm like, you haven't seen Orange Cassidy wrestle yet. Watch him his stuff on YouTube. He's a much better wrestler than people think.
I think it's another brick in that eventual build to Orange Cassidy potentially being an AEW world champion. Because
yeah, or at least the TNA champion. Or not TNA, TBS.
Yeah. Like either one of those, because I think when you see that the guy can wrestle and he's clicking with the crowd at such a great rate, and I mean, you look at Pro Wrestling Tees, a lot of his merch is among the top that is
being sold.
So he's moving merch, and he's moving merch better than some of the members of the Elite, which they're the masters of moving a merch. Same with Jericho, and to see him on that level, you see the money, you follow the money, you cash in on the money when you can. Whether that's the TNT title or a world title remains to be seen. But I think, like I look at half these guys in here, like Darby Allin could eventually be a world champion to some degree. Orange Cassidy, Rey Fénix. I love Rey Fénix. I think
he's so good.
He's going to be one of those guys that when he breaks out, it's going to be crazy. I think Scorpio Sky is another really talented guy. Kip Sabian, I think he's one of those guys that are going to meander around a little bit for a little bit, and he could eventually find a role within the company to help elevate him.
He's got to find the gimmick a little more than what he has. Yeah. I mean, because when you talk about the people you're talking about, Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, MJF, who was the other one? Sammy Guevara. There was somebody else you had mentioned. I can't remember. Rey Fénix, maybe. Orange Cassidy was the other guy I was thinking of. When you're looking at them, their gimmicks are all really very good and very defined, much more so than what Kip Sabian's is at this point. And yeah, he's super bad, and yeah, he has the super hot check, but there's not really anything there. It would be interesting if his whole, you know, working with Havoc led to him becoming more of a dark character like Havoc, like, you know, like the idea of that character starting to you know, take over his mind and influence him, and then he, you know, something like that, and then Penelope doesn't want him to go dark like that, and you can have this type of storyline, right, with his partnership with Havoc, and maybe it not working out as well as he thought. You know, there's things like that you could do. I think that would be really useful for him.
Yeah. No, you've written like a month worth of TV for them.
I think if I do it and the way they do it, it's like 4 months worth of TV.
Hey, and that's 4 months of potential, 4 months of potential entertainment, which is ultimately the goal with weekly TV wrestling. Exactly. The other two names in this, Frankie Kazarian, who I think is a good hand, will do stuff with SCU, but I don't think he'll ever be a world champion. But I think he will help keep shape the company and be involved behind the scenes. And Luchasaurus, I think, I don't know where he could land, but I think he's the base for this ladder match, and I think this ladder match is going to be wild. And I think I'm going to pick Darby Allin for this one because of the vignettes with Taz and just the kind of instant settlement.
I think the reason he doesn't win is because of the vignettes with Taz. Uh-huh. Because otherwise he doesn't need Taz if he wins. And the whole point is he's not listening to Taz and he could use him. I'm guessing it's going to be Pac whoever the special person, whoever the mystery opponent is probably the favorite, I think. But yeah, I mean, who knows who that's going to be, right?
Yeah, and I'm curious to see it. I'm excited to see it. Like this is going to be a great match, and there's a lot of solid talent in there. And I think you've got the right blend of different wrestling styles that I think this match will do well.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Next up, I'm going to go there before we get to the title pictures. This one is the Stadium Stampede, and I've seen a picture of the stadium, and they're really going all in and making this the Elite versus the Inner Circle in a Stadium Stampede match, which is going to be pandemonium. I just gotta say, and I said this on a podcast, I really love their street fight with Kenny and Matt versus
awesome.
Jericho. I know that there were some people that were saying it's the worst thing ever and it was dumb comedy, but it was amazing.
That was awesome. Most people are idiots.
I won't argue that one. But we've got the Elite. We've got the drunk cowboy with Hangman Adam Page, who's found his way out of the woods.
And that was so awesome when he came running in.
100-yard dash.
In the cowboy boots. Oh, that was so great.
You got the Cleaner, the Best Bout Machine, Kenny Omega, Matt and Nick Jackson making their return, the Broken Matt Hardy, who will change gimmicks when he needs to, so maybe we'll see a costume change in this match, and they are battling the Inner Circle with Le Champion, Chris Jericho, who is the MVP of AEW in a lot of ways, Jake Hager, the Spanish God, Sammy Guevara, who is a bright young star for that company, and a bright young tag team in Santana and Ortiz, who I think will eventually be world tag team champions at some point. What do you think of this
match? I got a question for you first. Do you think this is going to be one of those matches like what do you call it again? The cinema match, like the Undertaker. What's it called? Pardon me?
The cinematic match.
Yeah, like the Taker and or do you think it's gonna be like that, or do you think it's gonna be more like the brawl we saw backstage?
I think it's gonna be the brawl that we saw backstage, and I could see them sprinkling in some more things that they're gonna have to cut together, but that.
This apparently taped. I think it was taped yesterday.
Okay, so then there, it makes sense for wanting to limit the number of people around. So if they've already taped this, then that's that may be a little bit more cinematic. But I don't think it's going to be the dumb Gargano Ciampa style of shooting. I think this one will look like a match, but we'll have sprinkled in some potentially cinematic esque things.
Yeah, I don't think you'll see the 400 cuts. and that you know, has become part of WWE's playbook that, oh God, I hate. there's no other way to put it. I just hate that. Like, it's just so damned annoying. I think, like, for me, this is fairly brilliant because I know, like, I hate it. I mean, you can't complain about that backstage brawl and saying it was all comedy, because it was as serious as a heart attack compared to that stupid Money in the Bank match. I hated that. Did I mention I didn't like it? So
no. How did you feel about the latter Money in the Bank match, Mo?
I hated that so much. And you know, I this is, though, I mean, this is a chance. Like I think this is quite brilliant from them. They're like, okay, we can't do the stadium. We can't do the match and the fans. We're not going to do blood and guts that way. What can we do that's different and unique and that's never been done before? What do we have? And they're taking it like WWE did with the Titan Towers. But WWE did what they did. They're going to do the same thing, and they're going to take it and they're going to turn it into a positive quite brilliantly. And I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to this match. It's my most anticipated match. It should be everything. It's going to be sports entertainment done well.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to see any major turns or anything, because I think any major storylines are going to be saved for Blood and Guts, because according to Tony and Cody, that the plan is they still want to go to Rochester and they still really want to do Blood and Guts there. So,
yeah. And the thing about that is they it's like, that's why. Like, I was thinking this is a perfect place for FTR to show up and get help the Inner Circle get the win. And then they can't help them in Blood and Guts because they can't get in. And that makes sense. But do you waste, because it is a waste, their debut in front of nobody? Don't get me wrong, it would still get you know, the role showing up will still get some pay-per-view buzz and, you know, get social media buzz and all this and that. But I mean, not like if it was in front of a crowd, right?
Yeah, no, that's the thing that kind of sucks. You don't know when you're going to get a crowd, but that logically could be the way to do it. You don't have a turn, but you have something, and that's a storyline for Hangman to go, you cost us this match by harassing this tag team that wasn't even in our company, to the point where they quit that company to specifically come here to attack you two and cost us a big match.
Yep. There's a lot of ways you can go about it. So it'll be interesting. It feels like a real waste. It really does. But I kind of can see why you'd want to do it.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing with this is, how much vengeance is Matt Hardy going to get for Vanguard 1?
I don't know. Or will it be Vanguard 2 getting the vengeance?
I think Vanguard 2 is going to make an appearance, and it's going to be great. I'm more excited. It's going to be Sammy's going to get into a golf cart and want to take revenge.
Sammy Guevara is the best. Man, I love his vlog. So much fun.
They're killing. Like, this is a lot of talent in this match, and I'm really excited to see what happens. This is one of those anticipated matches that you see get thrown in there, and you're like, okay, well, where are they going with this? Is this just going to be filler? But the more you talk about it, and the more you think about the guys involved, especially Chris Jericho, and Matt Hardy, you just go, okay, there's some minds here that can definitely be creative and have some fun.
As much as I'm really done with the cinematic matches, though, the AEW or the being the Elite 200 was more fun for me than most cinematic matches. They did a great job. I laughed, and it's easier because it's on that, so it's not, you're not taking it serious because it's not, you know, it's not real TV. It's, you know, their YouTube show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm totally hyped for this.
Yeah, they had great callbacks in that match, and I love seeing.
I'm sorry. I love you. Come on. Because me and Addy have been making jokes about that for years, honestly.
Oh, man. Seeing them show footage of a ghost and just seeing a villain and seeing, like, even the build to it where they had Marty and Flip appear.
I know.
Like, it's just, and not to go too off topic, but Tama Tonga posted a couple images on Instagram of Kenny kissing both Marty at a different point in a match and then Cody in a BTE segment. And he's like, we're coming for you. We're coming. We're not finished with you.
Yeah, that's what he said. This isn't over.
I'm like, this is meant for a bigger podcast at a later date, but just to plant the seed in your head, what has this virus done to New Japan of America and their American expansion?
Oh, I never thought about that.
It's planting a bug in your.
Do they need it more? Is really the question, right? Do they now need much more need AEW? Because they haven't made any money for a while, and they've really lost momentum in the States. And I mean, they haven't even made any money in New Japan. That's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought about that.
So we'll save that for a later date. I'm sure we'll visit it next week. But
just we said we were gonna have a short pod and just be tight, and we've just been going on and on for about 14 hours already.
Yeah, you start
it's
talking
good,
about
though, Josh isn't here, so it's a good pod.
You get a nice flow going, and you can talk about everything. It's great. We'll put a pin in that because I think that's something to visit down the line. But we'll shuffle along here to the next match, which is a no DQ, no count out. We've seen Nyla Rose go through a table. She's defending her AEW Women title against Shida. I think how that ends kind of tips our hand of who's retaining in this match. But I think this should be a fun match. I think this will be a nice little good match, and I think this will be a good win for Nyla Rose.
Yeah, I'm really liking Nyla Rose. Her work is improving. She's different, which is great in the ring. Provides a great base for the other performers. And I really like her promos. Promos are really strong. I'm just digging. I'm definitely digging, the whole Nyla Rose, thing. So, I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. As far as only problem with this that I have again is back to the whole thing of I don't understand the ratings. Shida's been, the number one contender for 12 straight weeks, even though I've seen people, pin her in that period multiple times. It's not quite it's a little bit wacky. But other than that, great stuff.
I wonder if they're going to either scrap the rankings or start to tweak them to make things either easier on themselves or force themselves to follow it more.
It's not a bad idea. The problem is, of course, it stems from obviously it stems from the fact that the pandemic has made getting people in and telling they're able to still do this is according to Cody, this is still largely the card that we were going to see, but things like the rankings and making those make sense, getting the private party the wins that they want to get against the right opponents to make them all this type of stuff. I think that's really, I think it's really hurt the whole rankings thing, this whole pandemic and their ability to execute it the way they want to. And they were already having some trouble executing it. So
it's going to be interesting to see what they do with it moving forward. Next up is the tournament final. This tournament started with Cody and Sean, Sammy and Darby, Dustin and Kip, Colt, and then Lance Archer, and it's whittled its way down to two men. It is Cody with Arn Anderson and Brandi Rhodes taking on Murder Hawk Lance Archer with Jake the Snake Roberts, who's been a phenomenal promo. With the inaugural AEW TNT Championship on the line, with Iron Mike Tyson appearing on a wrestling show that is not ran by Vince McMahon, you gotta imagine Iron Mike's gonna be throwing a punch. Ideally, he throws a punch at MJF, but I don't see that happening. So it's now how does Iron Mike play a role in this, and who wins this match? Because
he's gonna be ringside, right? He's gonna be ringside for this match.
Who's he punching?
Well, it's gotta be Lance Archer.
And does that?
I don't know. It seems wrong because I think Lance Archer should go over.
I think so too.
I don't know. Maybe it's somebody else. You know who would be perfect? You know, actually, I got it. You know who's perfect is Sean Spears. Sean Spears beats Cody and then comes out during this match and gets in Mike Tyson's face and gets his ass knocked out.
Yeah, because he's coming to celebrate Cody losing. The roads have fallen again.
Yeah, and he's just so, I mean, his personality is so, man, again, another thing. How great was that when he and Guevara were betting in the middle of the match? Oh my God. That was so fantastic. Like I say, this is the same guy who looked pale and thin and didn't seem to show much personality other than this 10 count, which Vince McMahon didn't understand, which was a good gimmick, but Vince McMahon didn't understand. But you look at this guy now, and man, it's night and day, huh?
Oh, he's completely different from what they were giving. And getting punched by Iron Mike's not a bad spot to be in.
No, I mean, I bet you a lot of the guys want that.
Yeah, because that's clips that will be played for years.
Yeah, it probably shows up on Fox. I'm trying to think of who doesn't have who will show that clip in sports. But you know, Fox has a relationship with WWE, so maybe they won't. And ESPN has a relationship with WWE, but somebody you would have to think it would show up somewhere.
Oh yeah, I think so. I think Lance needs this win more, but I can also see the argument for putting it on Cody and being Cody having these great matches against all these mid-card guys, help almost kind of having a run like Cena did with the US title, and then having someone like a Darby finally beat him because there's a storyline there.
Unless somehow he gets screwed, if he loses clean, his character will definitely be hurt because the babyface always loses the big match. That hurts.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder, but I wouldn't sacrifice the momentum Archer has. So I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe there's a heel turn coming for Cody. Cause there's been some, like there's
maybe,
been
I think there could be, I think that would be a mistake. I don't see that happening. I could see an Arn Anderson heel turn though.
I that's another thing that could potentially, there's a lot of factors going into this match that you have no idea how it's going to play out. There's going to be a ripple effect for this pay-per-view. And you're not going to know how the dominoes are going to fall until they do. And that's exciting. And that makes for an entertaining pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. What a concept.
I know. It's crazy. Speaking of concepts. So one man goes from getting needles stuck in his ass and wearing gas masks and being more or less DOA as a wrestler, getting a nice little send-off from this big, massive corporation, and then just kind of disappearing and a video showing up and about a month to the day of Double or Nothing, and there's all these rumors that he could appear, and Jericho beats Omega, and Jericho's celebrating, and the crowd erupts, and you're like, who is that? And you see this man, this beast of a man walking down and just slithering like a snake into the ring. It's the same man that once wore a gas mask and had a needle, but he's different. He's John Moxley, and he brutalizes Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho. And now a year later, he is their world champion, and he's taking on a cult leader that was once in a cult that now leads his own little cult. And he's trying to make the same impact and trying to do the same thing that Moxley did a year ago. And it's John Moxley, Brody Lee, the AEW world champion. What are your thoughts? We've touched on it a little bit, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be better to Brody Lee to get some bigger wins and to build it for a little while. That's what I would have preferred. But as far as, you know, I think they'll have a very good match. Both will be incredibly motivated. Moxley's character, he's the good bad guy.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's the bad good guy. I don't know. He's one of those things, right? And that's cool because it makes him different. And it's like, yeah, he's the actual personality that he has is not that different than the Dean Ambrose personality. The execution is 100% different.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, he feels like he's going to be a long-term champion. And maybe that, and I think that's probably the reason why they didn't go with MJF, is because going with MJF, I don't think they wanted to beat MJF, and yet I don't think they want to take the title off Moxley. So they're kind of, you know, they're stuck in this, you know, this quagmire of how do we go about this? I think that's one of the things that happened here. But yeah, I mean, it's probably my fourth most anticipated match. You know, Stadium Stampede, then the Cody Archer, then the ladder match, and then this. The thing about the ladder match, you know what I'm really looking forward to about that one is to see what a ladder match, a multi-man ladder match like this will look like. You know, one competitor, multi-man, instead of team, ladder match like this without WWE's style and producers kind of working on it, because their matches, when they become a multi-man one like this, become a lot of, hey, set this up so this can be used later, and it's really, really obvious and it looks phony. And yeah, those spots when they pay off are usually fantastic, but it hurts the flow of the match. So I'll be curious to see if that has that problem, or if they, you know, if they're just better at it here and then just do it better, which is possible.
No, I tend to agree with everything you've said. I think that Moxley is absolutely retaining. It feels like in some ways Brody is just that little quick plug to be like, okay, we've got him. Let's put him here for now. We'll eventually get back to him doing other things and kind of get him kind of a little more on track after this. Moxley, this will keep his reign going. He needs a successful retain. This will be his first, this may be his second or third title defense, heading in after beating Chris Jericho. And that storyline's not done with Jericho, I don't think. I think Jericho at some point will want to get that world title back. So there's more story to be told. As for the ladder match, I think you're right. I think I'm really curious to see how this gimmick works and how they do it without having 1,000 fingers in the cookie jar. That's AEW Double or Nothing 2020. You sound like you're excited for the show.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good show. It sucks for me. I'm not going to be able to watch it live because I've made another commitment. That's also going to be a lot of fun, so I probably won't get to it till probably about 10 p.m. our time, as a give or take. And then I'll watch it. I don't care if it's 4 hours. I'm going to watch the whole damn thing.
I'm really excited to sit down and watch this. It's one of those little bits of escape that you can have, and it's just there's a lot of things within this that I'm like, I'm curious to see what happens. I'm really curious to see what happens, how this plays out. And AEW continues to entertain me. I miss New Japan, but I'm glad I have AEW around.
Yeah, they're very different products. I thought they would be very similar products, when AEW was launching. They're very different products. But I love having both. One gives me my sports entertainment. The other one gives me my wrestling. And you know, yeah, I can't wait. I may actually watch tonight. I hear it's so great. I may watch my dad is a heel wrestler. Have you watched that yet?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I think it expires in September with New Japan World. So
yeah, I think so. In our region,
yeah,
I think that's when it expires. But I'm just completely looking forward to that. I hear it's, like I say, here's great, and I might just watch that tonight. Yeah, and if I do, then you know, when we review Double or Nothing, you know, whenever, probably Sunday morning or whatever, depending on your schedule. unless you end up reviewing it with Josh before that or something like that, then you know, we can talk. My dad is a heel wrestler too. If you have a chance to get around to it,
I'm gonna make an attempt at that. I'm gonna really make an attempt. I may watch that before the pay per view.
Yeah.
So there we go.
It's supposed to be great.
We talked a lot longer than I anticipated, but I think we got I got to hear some great your thoughts on Owen, which I really loved hearing. We got to talk AEW, and you got
some other heart stories off air that we'll share sometime with the listeners.
And that's the thing, that it just, wrestling keeps on giving, and you've got more and more to talk about and more little things to pull on. So thank you for coming on.
Sometimes you need to give people, you need to give them a tease, you know, come back to hear the stories.
Because you will enjoy. I can vouch all the stories are enjoyable, and I think there's a lot more entertaining content coming down, because pro wrestling doesn't stop. A virus doesn't stop the shenanigans from happening, and I'm sure there's going to be more shenanigans that are going to be happening in the next couple weeks. God only knows what's coming next. It just seems to be a bad year for WWE, so who knows what hits they're going to take moving forward, but we will be here covering all of it with Mo's wit and my, I don't know, just...
Yeah. I don't know either. If we're going to compliment you, then we're really going to take some work.
Yeah, I think this is a good place to end this, because we may be...
Oh, hey, what's the difference between a golf ball and the G-spot?
What?
Men will look for a golf ball.
Oh, that was the joke. I'm signing off. Thank you, listeners, for being here. And that's what everyone's waiting for. They listen to the whole podcast, not to listen to the wrestling, but to wait for your joke, Mo. That is what the listeners wait for. Every time they see you're on,
you make it sound like I didn't deliver a good enough one then.
No, I thought you delivered.
All right.
I think you nailed it there, and I think that's what people wait for, is Mo's jokes. It's not to hear us talk about wrestling. But thank you, Mo, for coming on. I'm sure you're going to be working on more material for down the line, because you will be back, and we will continue to search for that golf ball. Is there anything you'd like to plug for We Talk?
Yeah, we always have really good material. I had a couple of really good interviews, one with Ron Keel, who's a veteran singer that I was really proud of, that went up recently. And May being Mental Health Awareness Month, we actually had a young artist, and she it was a really long interview. She, fascinating, her new album, her name is Mackenzie Nicole, and she has a new album about her mental health journey. And it was really quite fascinating, and actually helped me a lot evaluate my own mental health and whether or not I'm taking care of it properly. Here for mental health. So if nothing else, you can go check out the short video. It's a short movie. It's all the videos, all the songs. It's called Mystic, for Mackenzie Nicole on her YouTube as well. So yeah, that's about it.
That is definitely all worth checking out, as always. And I mean, we can talk about Fresh Take Network and, you know, say that they've got a lot of good content there, and to go check them out. And
we can, but, you know.
we'll think about it. I'm sure you can find them on Twitter and Instagram and follow as long as they talk about basketball. I think they talk about basketball and movies and pop culture. I think that's their thing. But
they pretty much talk. Yeah, they talk everything, and, which is good. You know, they talk all the stuff I don't get around to, which is plenty of stuff.
See, there you go. And always, we will be your one-stop listen for pro wrestling on We Talk. So keep on coming back. We're going to keep putting shows out, and we will be back with a Double or Nothing review at some point. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Goodbye. And good night. Bye.